This is Mary Caffrey for Chief Healthcare Executive, an online publication of MJH Life Sciences. Welcome to a new podcast, Healthy Bottom Line, which will examine a policy issue of importance to health system decision makers. Welcome to a Chief Health Executive panel discussion. I'm Mary Caffrey. I'm an Associate Editorial Director with MJH Life Sciences. I previously served as in the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance in 2002-2003 during the last hard market, which we will explain in a few minutes. And I'm welcoming Heather Moore, who is Vice President of Risk Management, Quality and Compliance at the OB Hospitalist Group, and Dr. Marita Tan, who is a clinical instructor in obstetrics and gynecology at Northwestern University Medical School and a board member with ISME. So we're going to discuss the topic of maternity care and today's risk environment. We've heard a lot about, even before the pandemic, about issues with maternity mortality and risk issues associated with maternity care. Whenever there is what's called a hard market in medical malpractice, maternity and obstetrics tends to be one of the practice areas that is especially affected. So we're going to talk about that in terms of the emerging hard market in malpractice and especially what COVID has done to add to the situation. So I'd like to start out by allowing each of our panelists to introduce themselves. And Heather, if you could introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your group and what you do.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me today. I'm Heather Moore. I'm the Vice President of Risk, Quality, and Compliance with OB Hospitalist Group. We are the largest provider of OB hospitalist services in the country with a little over 180 hospital partners to date and over 1,000 employed OBGYNs, as well as a small midwifery practice as well in the hospital. And I have been with the organization for over 10 years and primarily focus on our risk management and quality platform that we call SAFE and oversee all of our risk finance activities and the world of the hard market and what we do on the risk finance side.
Okay, thank you so much. And Dr. Tan, can you introduce yourself and tell us about what you do and also your relationship with ISME?
My name is Marita Tan. I am a practicing full-time OBGYN in an independent private practice at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago. And I'm also on the board of ISME and have been on the board for many years.
Okay, great. So we're going to explain a little bit about what a hard market is compared to a soft market in malpractice. Heather, why don't you get started and tell us a little bit about what a hard market is in medical malpractice?
So a hard market is really the way that I think about it, is at least, and there's maybe more some better eloquent way to put that, is really just a constriction of the market and a self-correction of the market. So the property casualty market that comprises MedMal has been, you know, over 100% loss ratio for many years. We're seeing an increase in severity in OB MedMal claims and I think some volatility in the jurors with some really mega, or even I've heard, you know, the term nuclear verdicts that have been out there. And so really the hard market speaks to that shrinking capacity in the medical malpractice space, stricter underwriting guidelines, and the way that that plays out for, you know, a physician or a group that's buying medical malpractice insurance is what happens is the premiums are increasing because there's fewer players who are interested in riding high-risk lines, of which OB tends to be a front runner, a loss leader. And so fewer players wanting to write that business and results in increased premium to offset what has been eroding loss ratios for probably at least the past 5, if not 10 years.
Okay. And Dr. Tan, what happens at the practice level and to practicing physicians like yourself when a hard market starts to emerge?
Well, clearly, when a hard market emerges, you know, our options are limited, our premiums are going up. We already have rather high premiums, and any percentage increase in premium can really affect our bottom line.
Okay. So I remember I was working for the New Jersey Insurance Department during the last hard market, and back then, the idea of a hospitalist was I think it was probably just coming into being. It certainly wasn't as common as it is today. And we would get phone calls from OBGYNs being told they couldn't buy insurance at all. Some were being told that they could still practice gynecology, but the obstetrics part of their practice, they were being asked to drop. We would get calls from midwives that they couldn't find coverage anywhere. We would get calls from patients who couldn't find an obstetrician to deliver their baby and were considering going over to Pennsylvania. So from Dr. Tan, maybe I'll start with you. Are these things starting to happen again? Are you hearing stories like this?
I don't think it's gotten that bad. It's just starting to harden, I think, from what I understand. Luckily I'm at a company that has always supported physicians. We were created by physicians, we're led by physicians, and I think we would never leave them so high and dry, basically. So that's one thing about us. You know, we've been very stable. We've been around for over 40 years, and we wouldn't just drop the market, which is what happened with a lot of other companies in the last hard market. So I think that's also led to better retention of our physicians in our company. So,
okay. And Heather, how has the role of the hospitalist emerged, say, in the last 10 to 15 years to try to address some of the issues that emerged, say, 10 to 15 years ago, the last time this occurred?
So I think one of the clear reasons that hospitals would be looking to go with a hospitalist model is how do we improve quality and how do we improve outcomes? Because at its very root level, if you're able to improve quality and decrease the likelihood of bad outcomes, the ability for those big scary claims to come in the door have been mitigated because, you know, hopefully you have reduced harm. And so I think that in the last hard market, I think probably a lot of people and physician groups and hospitals were probably caught sideways of, okay, what do you do? And you're losing the ability to transfer the risk to an insurance. You have to become really an owner of your own risk and be accountable of your risk and say, what do we do around education, supporting our clinicians, supporting our physicians, being proactive with potential early resolution? How do we address that so we don't get sideways again? And I think a hospitalist model is part of that. And where we saw the earliest growth over the last 10 years was in the Florida market. And there's no better place than Florida to look at kind of the pitfalls from medical malpractice and physicians who had to operate bare or without insurance because they really were unable to afford to purchase it. The other thing we've seen on the physician side is intense growth and a interest in a model like ours being employed in this model. And one of the biggest areas in addition to kind of lifestyle balance is that they don't have to worry about the overhead of the med mal piece. They don't have to worry about their tail liability and what that's going to do, as Dr. Tan pointed out, to their bottom line in their practice. That piece has been lifted from them. And I think that's been a huge satisfier of physicians who have gone into OB hospitalist work and our kind of model.
So Dr. Tan, talk about some of the changes that have happened maybe in education and training and some of the risk management steps that that ISME and OB gynecologist practices in general have taken to avoid bad outcomes and to improve safety.
Well, I think we took some lessons from the airline industry, for example, and are using more safety training techniques such as simulations, use of checklists, changes in protocol to improve the system to better deal with both the routine and emergency situations. For example, now we have shoulder dystocia simulations and training. We have OB hemorrhage training and protocols. So a lot of the lessons learned from that industry have sort of translated to better care in our industry. Through ISME, we've developed a lot of courses and online activities and webinars that help with better risk management activities, such as better documentation, how to avoid liability pitfalls through improved communication and things like that. So I think we've learned. I think we're improving. We're continuing to improve. ISME has really incentivized the use of these risk management activities to improve outcome, and it's been proven in our data in terms of reduced claims being made with those who have participated fully.
So health systems have undergone a lot of change over the last decade. There's been a lot of merger activity. There's probably pros, there's probably cons of this from a medical malpractice perspective. Heather, can you talk to about maybe what are some of the pluses and minuses of the hospital merger activity from a malpractice perspective?
Well, I think one of the clear wins from a lot of activity and merger activity has been the benefit around education and financing of a lot of risk management initiatives and areas of focus that maybe struggled before to get the funding or to really prove out their ROI. And as Dr. Tan just mentioned, a variety of things that are without doubt helping the standardization of care, helping improve outcomes. And a lot of that's been able to be achieved by merger activity and really net new funding or additional investment kind of influence around some of these activities that really are need to desperately be funded to support a hospital's perinatal initiatives and where they want to go in that space. So I think that that's been a clear win. And standardization across the board, you know, you can argue on that point some, but I think when it comes to OB and in the airline checklist comparison, I think it's definitely a net positive experience to the patient and the quality. One of the things that I've heard about the merger issues on MedMal that I think have presented some unintended consequences have been in the rush to be part of that and gobbling up the respective pieces of the pie. I think a lot of times it wasn't clear what risk you were buying. So you were merging, but you didn't know what you were getting and what risk. So you would take on a large physician practice, but you didn't have a ton of visibility because you were limited on due diligence time of what that looked like. And the problem is now that whether it's a big system or a large group or however, or an investor, now they have to deal with that risk down the line and maybe realize that maybe we should have pulled back the layers a little bit more in the beginning, because now we have to figure out how we manage a risk that maybe wasn't fully seen going into the relationship. And I think those are probably some of the clear lessons learned on the con of how that's transpired.
So Dr. Tan, from your perspective on the ISME board, in doing some research, getting ready for the discussion, it's not always this way, but sometimes there's a temptation that the bigger the entity, that the perception of the deep pocket. Have you seen any evidence of that in the claim situation from your perspective?
I mean, I think that's always the perception. You know, the hospital tends to be the deeper pocket than the physician, for example. So yes, I mean, the lawyers know where the deep pocket is, right? And that's what they go for.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit, move into COVID and how has that possibly changed the risk landscape for the OBGYN profession? Dr. Tan, maybe if you want to take this one.
Well, in OB, we haven't stopped for a pandemic. People are still having babies. That doesn't stop in a pandemic. And so we've continued to see our patients through the pandemic and through lockdowns. We've done a little bit more with telemedicine when possible, but ours is a specialty that usually requires some form of an exam, and that really needs to be done in person. So we've continued. The gynae part obviously slowed down during the pandemic. You know, if it wasn't an urgent issue, initially we held off on a lot of those visits. Patients were more reluctant to come in. I think that's changing. You know, things are opening up more, they're coming back. I think the fear on the gynae side of things and on the primary care side of things was that patients weren't getting their normal routine care, including their normal screening tests for mammograms and colonoscopies and things like that. And from a malpractice point of view, you know, that could be a pitfall. You know, there can be delays in diagnosis because of that. But we are coming out of it. Things are returning somewhat to normal. So I'm hopeful.
Okay. Yeah, there was just a big story in the New York Times as we're talking today. There was just a big story about the problems with the delayed screening and how that's presenting itself. So Heather, from the role of a hospitalist, how has COVID changed things from their perspective?
So I would echo what was just said, that pregnant patients are still pregnant. They're still showing up to the hospital to have their babies. So we have a little bit of a different view in that we're 100% in the hospital, don't have private practices. And so we're there to support community physicians and then an unassigned patient who might not have a private physician. We haven't seen as much activity in terms of COVID being issues with either the patients that present. You know, most of our patients are younger, childbearing years, who are presenting, who might not have as many of the risk factors that are the biggest concerning issues driving COVID. You know, from the MedMal side, one of the things that we have in the OBHC program is we support hospitals in converting their triage to an OBED, so an OB emergency department. And that creates a team-based assessment where you have nursing, but you also have an OB physician who's going to see every patient that presents to the OBED. And one thing that occurred in COVID was that community physicians who either didn't want to come in or they were trying to cohort in the patients that were presenting to the hospital, you know, only a subgroup of physicians were coming in to see those. We were able to kind of take lead, and for a lot of hospitals, being the team then that would see those patients who were presenting in the early days, in particular to limit exposure. The one risk factor that has emerged, I think, is interesting, is that because patients are limited in having their family or friends come with them, sometimes that patient advocate role or the historian is being limited if the patient is presented in distress and they're coming in by themselves. And I think that's been a challenge. We haven't seen major issues come of that, but you know, the word was used, pitfall. Are there things then that get missed because you can't have that critical role of patient advocate or family and friends come in with the patient to the ED setting?
Okay. So when we started the conversation, we talked about the fact that even in the period leading up to the pandemic, there was a lot of discussion about the issues of maternal mortality, issues of disparities. Issues of disparities have continued to be quite an active issue all through the pandemic and probably will continue to be beyond. So how have these issues played themselves out as the pandemic has continued? And do we need areas of law or regulation to help bring clarity to these issues and bring more clarity to the risk environment for obstetricians, either due to COVID or for other reasons? Dr. Tan?
Well, that's a tough one. In terms of disparities and COVID, clearly COVID affects, you know, the lower income group areas and populations more. It's been disproportionately affected in minorities as well. I think access to care is a big issue. And as hospital systems consolidate and that access may be affected, that obviously is a big factor as well. I don't have a great solution though.
Yeah. I mean, but are there areas where, sometimes in the area of malpractice, sometimes laws and regulations are unclear, and then that can lead to the kind of disputes that can lead to claims, you know, heavy claims or heavy jury awards. Are there areas where there the lack of clarity is a problem, and maybe either state legislators or NAIC or Congress even needs to bring more clarity to the situation?
Well, certainly we'd love to see more tort reform done. Definitely affects the bottom line in medical malpractice. And it doesn't seem like it would get done on a state level. And so certainly federal changes are really in need.
Okay. Heather, your thoughts on the issue of disparities and need for clarity in either law or regulation?
Well, I think I'll say, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in that. And I would say if you take it one step, you know, back up one step and just kind of think about what has led to the issues in the current medical malpractice market that we're talking about. I think you have two pieces that are emerging. One is, as Dr. Tan pointed out, the issue around tort reform or failed tort reform, which I think were some early indicators that the market would shift and kind of opening the ceiling on how, you know, the valuation of certain claims or what plaintiff would be able to obtain for claims. I think the other piece is how the jury has reacted to certain claims. I think that we've seen volatility in the juries and types of verdicts that they're awarding. And so even though that's a very small percentage of cases that ever go for, you know, jury for a potential verdict, it is still, I think, an indication of where society is kind of as a whole. And I think we have juries that are wanting to verbalize the issues around disparity, racial considerations, lack of access, maternal mortality. We're hearing that through the way that verdicts are coming out, which are some of these astronomical verdicts. And I think that if you were pie in the sky thinking about opportunities, is there a way in the medical malpractice system for laws or regulations to create an equitable solution for patients that are truly harmed, but also that a system that is designed to be fair to all stakeholders in the process, and that includes the defendant as well. And these are a lot of the cases in OB are highly complex cases that involve two patients. We can't lose sight of it, you know, baby and mom. And, you know, sometimes these cases, I think, are, they're looked at by a jury of peers who are not OBs or they're not physicians. And they're so complex that they can get lost in kind of the nuances of the experts. And you end up with potentially astronomical verdicts that are a statement about society or disparities that aren't necessarily lined up with the actual damage or harm that occurred in the case. And so somehow rectifying those two would be the proverbial, you know, silver bullet of solutions. But how you achieve that, I think, is highly complicated and challenging.
My commissioner used to say, not every bad outcome is malpractice. And
that's exactly right.
Yeah. And that's hard. That's hard to explain. But that's how she would explain it. She was excellent at what she did. I like to give everybody an opportunity to share any final thoughts that they have on the topic. Anything related to this topic that we didn't cover, Dr. Tan?
Oh, I just thought I'd put in a plug for ISME. You know, as health systems have undergone these mergers and consolidations, I think, you know, ISME has tried to respond by expanding to all 50 states and to creating a wider range of products to help assist physicians and groups in protecting themselves. So we have created more custom tailored products. We have a wide range of services that we can provide. And, you know, that's how we've tried to adapt and evolve.
Okay. And Heather, any last thoughts?
I think this is a critically important topic. I think we're not gonna come out of this in the next year. It's gonna be probably here to stay for a while as the market goes through this cycle, and hospitals and health systems are going to have to get really creative, and physician groups, and, you know, going to have to think about alternative, whether it's risk transferring or insurance arrangements through their carrier relationship, or they're going to have to figure out what are the next things that we're going to do in-house. Is it better shoulder dystocia management? Is it better management of fetal strips? Is it looking for different solutions like an OB hospitals platform, or, you know, a mixed bag of solutions to really take ownership of their risk and control that, because the ability for them to transfer that risk through insurance in a traditional model, I think, is becoming more limited. So have to really get creative and, I think, get outside of the box in this next season.
Well, this has been a great discussion. I want to thank Heather and I want to thank Dr. Tan for joining us. And if you look in the show notes on Chief Health Executive, you'll be able to, I'll attach the links for both OB Hospitalist Group and for ISME. And I thank everyone for joining us. And please check out the website for Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks so much for joining us.